Welcome to the McCovey Croncast. This is our 10th episode. You are listening to me, Brian Murphy, and with me is...
I'm Doug Brizzoni.
That's right, and we are here with our first guest ever for the show. This week, it's Grant Brisby of Barstool Sports. I'm sorry, of Breitbart Sports. I'm sorry, of Pitchfork. Grant Brisby of Pitchfork. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Yeah, glad to be here. I have lots of thoughts on EPs and such, so we should just get right into it.
That's right. I feel like that intro was like a 5.6, somewhere in that range. Grant Brisby obviously is the brain of McCovey Chronicles, of SB Nation, really of Major League Baseball's digital presence. It goes Grant Brisby, then MLB Advanced Media.
I'm the one who built up the branding that you guys are both ruining.
That's right. That's right.
And you're welcome, because that's why you did it.
I just want you to know that for it all takes years and years to build it all up, but it really took me like 5 seconds of retweeting something to bring it all crashing down. I guess the Giants news this week has been, well, I mean, it's been very sad, the passing of Monty Irvin, but at 96 years old, that's a really good life, and certainly had a lot of stories, and certainly a very historic baseball career. And the article that you posted the other day, that Mexican League story is amazing.
Yeah, when something like that happens, when Monty Irvin passes, it makes me realize that I'm an idiot for not knowing nearly enough about Monty Irvin. You know, I'll read something like Jay Jaffe wrote an obituary for Sports Illustrated, and it had, you know, I should note that. I mean, he's so important in Giants history. He was just so transformative, like, back in the day. So what I did is I grabbed my books, whatever books I have on my shelf, and I'm trying to pretend like I know enough to write about him sensibly. And that story just stuck out. That was a good one. Should we recount the story for people who might not have read it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Well, you should all be reading the site constantly, just refreshing no matter what, so that you can grab all of this great content we're churning out. But
clicking,
yeah, it's a great story. Clicking on it.
Clicking on ads, especially. No, it's so Monty Irvin and Roy Campanella are in the Mexican League on different teams, and Monty Irvin's up. It's the bottom of the ninth. He has the bases loaded, and his team is down. And the owner of the league says, "Hey, I will give you $200 if you get a hit here." Sounds like a great deal. I mean, that's a lot of money at the time. So Irvin goes back and tells Campanella, "If you call for a fastball and I win the game, I will give you $100. And Campanella agrees and then calls for a curveball. But Irvin knows, he's got the stink of Dodger on him before he's even with the Dodgers. And he knows not to trust him. So he looks curveball, gets the curveball, wins the $200, and then keeps it for himself. Just brilliant all around.
It's great. It's the kind of story that really you could only find in baseball. I told that to someone who doesn't like sports, actively loathes baseball, in fact. And I said, my preface was, you're going to like this story, and it's the kind of story you can only hear in baseball. And then I said the exact same story you just did, and this person was just bowled over, and for half a second seemed very interested in the story potential of baseball. So
you almost was the person under 40?
Under 40, that's right.
Wow, you almost had one. Had him.
That's right. but I happen to accidentally have on Mad Dog Russo the other day, but I didn't know it was his show because Peter McGowan was talking. So I came upon it. It was on the radio, radio simulcast. And Peter McGowan was talking about just the importance of bringing Irvin into the fold when McGowan and the new ownership took over, about bridging the New York Giants and the San Francisco Giants fans, because neither side really cared, that the histories were essentially separate. And Monty Irvin is very much representative of that. And just the idea that his career was ruined by racism, essentially, that was what was part of the Jay Jaffe article that you mentioned, right? That it was that basically institutional hate diminished an amazing baseball player and a really solid person, it just is staggering to me. We're in the 21st century, and it just seems like that kind of stuff, it's just silly. It's silly season. And hearing him talk about how it bridges the two sides was really, to me, an important part in why the Giants now are really, they really did a good job of blending themselves into the DNA of the city and in San Francisco, and just becoming sort of that thing that every baseball team tries to aspire to be, and be that public annuity or that public benefit. Like, it's a civic sell, essentially.
Right. And I mean, to listen to Urban speak after the fact, he had every right to just be so bitter and filled with loathing. I mean, I would think I would be. I mean, that's the level of discourse, you know, in general, is that, you know, it's just everyone likes to hate things, and he had every reason to just be filled with hate, and he wasn't. And he's just, every time he spoke about his own personal history, he was just so fascinating and magnanimous, and just thankful for what he got to do rather than what he didn't get to do. And what he didn't get to do was, I mean, it's a lot. It's, you know, he had such a great major league career, but he didn't get it started until he was until he was 30 years old. Hey, how good could he have been with 10 years against major league pitching? It would have been fun to watch. But that also brings up a pretty good point. When you talk about New York, San Francisco Giants, I mean, do you guys, because when I run a lot of my like searches for history, like this is the best Giant shortstop since, I will set it at 1958. Part of that is because, you know, I only care about the San Francisco Giants because, you know, I'm a regional slob just like everyone else, but also because I don't want to gum it up with people from 1920, like, you know, Hookfoot McGee and stuff like that. Is that something like that you guys do when you are thinking about Giants history? How hard is it for you to think about New York? Or do you just like to kind of lump it all under the same umbrella and take Christy Mathewson and he's the same as Willie McCovey?
Go ahead, Doug. I've been talking too much.
So for me, I like to kind of look at the history of the whole franchise, because it's a lot more interesting for me to sort of research the New York guys and learn about them. Because, you know, before I started, you know, when I started writing for the site, I would do those like all-time Giants team articles, and I would just look guys up and I'd be like, I have no idea who the hell Travis Jackson is, but he was a shortstop for like a decade in the 20s and 30s, and he's in the Hall of Fame. And so he's, you know, canonically, he's probably the greatest Giants shortstop of all time. I don't know a lot about him. I don't know if he actually had a better career than Rich Aurelia. I don't know if Freddie Lindstrom really was, well, Freddie Lindstrom is probably not better than Jeff Kent, but they're more names to me. And the difference to me, it's not really geography, though geography is why I follow the Giants. The difference to me is that it's hard to tell from an era that's that long ago how good those players really were.
Right. Hey, that's Stephen Goldman would always tell me, when we worked together, look, these players back then, they were all basically dying from scurvy. Every single one of them, they were all malnourished and like the size of Beck. Like they were, you know, you cannot compare these players to the players of today. And so I've always kept that in mind, but at the same time, yeah, you know, for their time, you know, Travis Jackson was phenomenal. He was on a team that was an absolutely legendary franchise under John McGraw. You know, they just they were kind of a dynamo of one of the original 16 teams. So I always struggle with it, you know, because I know that I wouldn't care about the Giants if they weren't in San Francisco. So part of me thinks, you know, and I'm just going to focus on 58 and after. But another part says, you know, that's great history that you're willing to toss out with the bathwater. That is Christy Mathewson and Mel Ott. When I was, I was probably sixth grade and I went to a sports camp, and you were supposed to go to the sports camp as your favorite athlete and just dress up as an athlete. And I went as Mel Ott. And no one got it. No one understood. And the reason I went as Mel Ott was because I had an old timey catcher's mask. And so I put it on and went as Mel Ott, which was wrong in so many levels. I mean, he wasn't a catcher. My peers hated me. I just stood out and looked like a freak. I think my parents made me like a homemade shirt with Ott and like a number on the back, even though they didn't have numbers back then.
Mel Ott's number 4.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. But, well,
yeah.
See, I'm doubling down on the stupidity. Anyways, Mel Ott was my My favorite catcher of all time. That's where that story was going.
See, so that was very pitchfork of you to dress as an obscure player at a youth camp, essentially.
Exactly.
I use the San Francisco era because it seems to me that when people are, and it's just basically for ease of reading on the site. I think that when you're doing post-game recap caps or whatever, for me, it just makes a lot of sense to keep the access very simple. But that's why you guys do a very good job of saying, like, okay, that's what happened last night, but do you know what this means in the larger scheme of things? Sure, this is the best in 30 years, but how about the best in 100 years? And that to me is like, that's great for setting up further content down the line. But to me, it just, San Francisco Giants, it's pretty clear. Plus, I like the idea that the San Francisco Giants, to me, the New York Giants obviously are, they're in amber. They're in history now, and their accomplishments are many, and they are revered. And I feel like the San Francisco Giants, at least as long as I've been alive, have still been trying to kind of equal that legacy, essentially. So to me, that's another reason why it makes sense to just stick to the more recent history.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, one thing I will not apologize for is running so many searches and starting a lot of things with after they moved into AT&T Park, because that's just so perfect. They started it in 2000. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's so great. It's just a nice line of demarcation for a lot of reasons.
Oh, it makes my job so much easier. If they started in like 1999, then everyone could see why I was picking that year, and it'd be kind of like hokey. But no, it's a nice round number. Hey, I'm just, you know, setting that line arbitrarily there.
Yeah, you could really just boil it down, even though it's not math, or it's what, not calendar wise correct, but like this century, the Giants have been. And it just makes it a lot easier that way. So I want to circle back to one thing you said about Monty Irvin, how he could sound a lot more bitter than he does and a lot angrier than he did. I mean, I guess I'm bad segue, and I know you don't listen to the podcast, so I know you know I have bad transitions. But in this case, Angel Pagan's going to sound worse complaining about his position move than Monty Irvin's going to ever sound about institutional racism. Are we in agreement about this?
I think Skype dropped that part of the question. I think it is going to be, I don't know how much we're going to hear from Pagan. I mean, I think he is a diva, like Kruko said. I think he is, I think he has to be. I think that's just part of his makeup, and that's how he got to be as successful as he is, considering he was, you know, kicking around the depths in the minor leagues for most of his early 20s. He was never a top prospect. So he kind of needs to have that, you know, I'm the best and no one's going to stop me now kind of mentality. I just don't think we're going to hear a lot about it. I think any grumbling will be behind the scenes, and Bochy will deal with it in his grumbly way behind the scenes as needed. I really don't think we're going to see a lot of on-field pouting or post-game quotes that'll turn our heads. Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but that's just my guess.
All right. No, that seems like how Pagan works. Because if you remember when he's complained about things, it's come out a little bit later as kind of a justification why the Giants were still starting him in center, but he hasn't directly gone to the media. He hasn't been like, oh yeah, I should definitely be playing every day. I don't know, maybe once or twice. Maybe once or twice he said something like, well, I look at myself as the starting center fielder and I want to be in the lineup every day. But that's not the kind of complainy diva stuff that you really talk about. So I would agree that it's going to be behind the scenes.
Also, if he's playing every day, essentially, in left field, it would be extremely difficult for any, you know, reasonable person, even if they are a diva, to complain. They're still playing. And Grant, your article yesterday was, you know, comparing he and Blanco's performance. It's very eerie, obviously. But, you know, essentially, the point was, if you didn't read the article, again, great content every day on McCoveyChronicles.com. but essentially, the point was that the Giants can't lose given what they have on the roster. I mean, obviously, they could upgrade and get Justin Upton, which, you know, they can't afford really at this point. But they would be fine with either of those guys. And that probably means Pagan's going to play every day.
Yeah, I don't think there's a decision that's, you know, that you can really shake your fist at with Blanc or Pagan and left. I think Pagan's got the better career, the longer track record for the last few years, whereas Blanco seems to be on a little bit of an upward trend with his highest on-base percentage of his career last year. But I don't think there's a way to really screw it up. And even if you do, it's nice knowing there's a little bit of a safety net behind it. But with the position switch with Pagan, the thing that I don't get is, so say I'm hired by a company to write about politics in the Middle East, and I'm terrible at it, because I would be. I would be unbelievable. I mean, like, you could probably milk, like, three Shawshank references that apply to the Middle East, and then the more you use it, the more inappropriate it becomes, and I would be terrible. And then it would be like someone saying, well, why don't you write about baseball for that site? And like, it'd be like me yelling at them, no, how dare you tell me to write about baseball? Like, I want to just fail spectacularly about this, and I want to keep doing it. That's why you paid me to do it. So I would think there'd be like, you know, on the surface, like Pagan would be like, no, I'm the center fielder. It's what I do. But internally, there's got to be some measure of, oh, thank God, I was terrible out there. I mean, he's got to know, right? Like that weekend where he gave up like six triples, like he gave those triples up.
Right. I agree. I also don't know why. I understand ego enough, but I understand if someone's still wanting you, that an adjustment, that you're still staying around. I don't understand why there's a pride factor in being like, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to do this instead. I feel like it all makes sense psychologically, but I guess I can't get beyond the diva-ness of it. Just the idea that someone's asking you to do something different from how you've done it, that you would kind of flip your hair and take offense to it in a way. That I don't understand.
My feeling is that, you know, he had to work his ass off to get to the majors for, you know, most of his 20s. And so he's thinking, well, I've overcome that. I can overcome this. I can be better. I can show them I'm still the guy I was. And it's, you know, he knows he was bad, probably. But I think that he thinks he can be good again. He thinks that if he just goes out there and works harder. It's the same thing that, if you remember when Aaron Rowan was on the team, and it seemed like every few times every week, Mike Kruka would talk about how nobody spends more time in the cage than him. Nobody, nobody, nobody. And it just didn't work. But that's how athletes are, that they just think, if I go out there and work harder, I will get the results, because in their lives, it has always worked.
Yeah, but right, life isn't a Rocky montage. I mean, really, you can't.
well, I don't think he's right.
Yeah. The weird part about Aaron Rowan is Aaron Rowan's in the batting cages, and you know he's doing the exact same thing every time he's in the batting cages. Angel Pagan, I can actually see, first of all, he actually has a decent approach at the plate, and he seems to adjust at bat sometimes. Whereas Aaron Rowan was, he stopped changing like right when he signed that contract, and he was the same guy. It seemed like he even doubled down by the end. The stance got more exaggerated. Just everything about him seemed to just fall apart, because he stayed exactly the same.
There's a little bit of sadness in that image of him in the batting cage, because you know he was just crushing every batting practice fastball that would come in the cage, and just being like, I got it. I don't get it. I can do this. Look at how hard I'm hitting the ball. Then he goes in the box and sees that first slider. Oh, the devil pitch. I forgot about the devil pitch.
And you know that they're sitting there going like, how come we never set the pitching machine to slider? Like, no one ever sat there and did that. And it'd be like that Simpsons joke. Oh, here's your problem. And they just switch it.
Yeah, here's your problem. Yeah. Switch to fastball.
I guess I'm bringing up the Angel Pagan thing because, you know, it's a nice problem to have. The Giants are – this is the angst I have. The Giants are front runners, effectively, going into this season. And I am extraordinarily uncomfortable with that feeling. Extraordinarily. I don't know how you deal with it. I think Doug puts up with me worrying about it. But how do you put up with it?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say they're front runners. They're definitely at the top of a division that is very much in question. And I think they've made the strongest roster going into a season since probably 2000. And that is both good and bad, in that in 2000, they were a playoff team. They had the best record in baseball. I'd had that same feeling where you were looking around the roster, and if you really wanted to pick on the Mirabelli Estelea hole, like you could say, oh, that's going to kill them. But you're basically looking for reasons to nitpick. So in that sense, it's good. But in the other sense, well, they had more success in 2002 in the postseason. They were maybe a better team by the end of 2010. Certainly, they had more postseason success, obviously, in the three championship years. So when you went into the season for 2010, 12, and 14, you weren't thinking this is a team that is, you know, wanting for nothing. You were thinking these teams, you know, they have their holes. Boy, I sure hope they can not screw it up at the deadline. I hope Mark DeRosa can stay healthy. Maybe John Bowker can do things. I mean, that's what you're thinking. You're not thinking Andres Torres. You're not thinking, you know, maybe Aubrey Huff can have 100 RBI or whatever. So going into the season with them as front runners is both unnerving and pleasant.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously there's somewhere in the middle, but you know, top of it is everyone plays to their ceiling and the floor is all these free agent signings just completely blow up in the Giants' faces. You know, they get, they get 5 ERA from Jeff Samardzija in the National League, and Johnny Cueto's shoulder, his labrum just explodes, and the explosion knocks out Denard Span for 100 games, and like, yeah, that is the catastrophe. But that is a possibility just based on all the people they've signed, managed to sign. But I can't look at that. I do not think about that. I go, yeah, that's it going wrong, but they still have a pretty solid roster outside of that. They have a pretty decent manager, and they have a team that seems very willing and aggressive to address their needs. So, you know, the trade deadline, if they're still in it, they're going to do something. And it's just very strange to go, there's no obvious holes right now.
Right. Like, if you're worried about Gregor Blanco and Angel Pagan,
that's
like,
a good problem.
Really
to have.
Worried about that.
That's a good problem.
Yeah. That's, I mean, you know, there are people right now just perseverating on it, that there's just, they've got the phone dialed, it's 808 KNB, and they can't mash that last R because they're so mad that they would dare go into the offseason or the regular season with a Pagan Blanco platoon. And, you know, it's just not that big of a problem. You know, I just just spent a long time looking at all the different roster holes around Major League Baseball for SBNation.com. Yes. And I was looking at some of these holes. Yeah, I think you should all read it. It's a very well
great,
put together piece. But
pretty good content on SBNation.com too, on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yes. But I you know, basically spent the last 2 days looking at the different holes different rosters had, and there's just some like weird. Like the Braves have Adonis Garcia hitting fifth for them in playing third, and he's a 30-year-old third baseman with very little major league experience, and it's. I mean, those are like the holes, and obviously the Braves are rebuilding, so maybe it's unfair to pick on them. But even good teams like have, wow, you're really going to start that? Okay, you know, I mean, like they have those holes. So for the Giants to have Pagan and Blanco with a backup plan behind them of Mack Williamson, who is, you know, definitely close to Major League ready, if not Major League ready, and then maybe behind him Jarrett Parker, who would probably strike out 200 times, but he's at least a pretty good fourth option. I think that would be pretty silly to kind of just pick on that one seeming weakness.
Yeah, I think the main weakness is just they don't really have a good backup infielder, but that's, you know, that's going to happen. You just can't have that many good, you know, so if somebody gets hurt, and then if it's Panic or Crawford, you have to start Ari Adrianza, which is not ideal, but at the same time, he isn't not a major league player. It could be worse.
Right.
Well,
he
Doug, I would ask you.
Not a major
worse.
Leaguer.
Yeah. That seems the lowest you could go, to be honest. So,
yeah.
But you seem convinced that he can show us a little bit more. I'll go with that. Why not?
No, I mean, it's. I don't know. I mean, once you could also say that they're going to. You know, get another Kelby Tomlinson out of their Kelby Tomlinson gritty infielder. Factory, you know, wherever, right. Whenever they started making one of those. And so it, who, I mean, you would probably know, you've got Rando Moreno, right? You've got Austin Slater. You've got these guys. One of them's just going to come up and just be completely random. And that would sort of point to Rando Moreno, right?
That's right. Yeah. All signs point to Rando Moreno.
Just literally some rando.
That's right. Yeah. Literally some rando. I mean, I hope that happens because any attention the Giants get nationally is great. And I feel like that's a great way to just get national attention. The Giants have some rando on their team? Holy crap.
Don't panic. Here comes some rando
that's
when
right.
the panic gets hurt.
The Giants.
Hold on, I gotta write that down.
everything else is just, and I guess the context or the background being that the Giants have won 3 championships, I wonder if you were to remove those from the equation, which I can't even do abstractly, I'm so happy, but if this were another team and they, a good faith, concerted, obvious, clear effort to address their needs with a very strong core offensively and a pretty good, pretty decent pitching here and there already going into the season, if things didn't turn out, I guess is the second part of my angst. Like, I don't know what to do about the Giants, being kind of front runners, but then also like if things don't go their way, I can't be mad about it. I can be disappointed that it's turned out like an odd year, but essentially it's like, well, the Giants did everything they could. Could they have drafted better a few years ago? Maybe, but the drafts are crapshoots, and free agency can be too.
Right, right. I mean, it's so easy to be like, why didn't they just trade the computer for Sonny Gray?
That's right.
But
they were also But the other part is they almost had it was almost Greinke and Samardzija. That's the part that's like, okay, so the Giants did everything they set out to do, basically, and I can't be mad. No one should be mad is actually my bigger point.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, it would be pretty hard to be mad on exactly who the Giants got. And they spent $220 million on 2 risky pitchers. Samardzija was bad, actively bad last season. Cueto looked like a much different pitcher last season to the point that when the postseason started, when he made his start, Royals fans weren't thinking, yeah, here comes Johnny Cueto. It's like they were freaking out because he looked like just such a different pitcher. And that's who the Giants got. And the recent history of the Giants spending big on free agents is Barry Zito and Aaron Rowan. So I can understand being a little nervous. At the same time, I can't understand being mad. Like, even if it doesn't work out, how are you mad? I mean, that is, you're basically just ignoring what's happened in the last 5 years, 6 years, which is weird to start with. But you're like ignoring the Giants finally making that effort to spend, like seeing this window. And basically this offseason is courtesy of Joe Panik and Matt Duffy. Like their presence allowed the Giants to step back and go, whoa, we're like wanting for nothing right now. As far as the offense, like we have everything in hand when it comes to our infield for the next like 5 years, we have a cost controlled infield. Let's go out and spend like maniacs. And they finally did it. Like it's everything we've wanted since I guess the Zito contract. So I just can't understand being mad. And like, I read the comments, I read every Facebook comment. There's some mad people.
Well, I even go back. I always go back to Vladimir Guerrero because for some reason that still stings, but it shouldn't. There should be no sting whatsoever. But it seems to me, it's just the thing that stuck in my craw for the longest time. That was the way that the Giants operated, quantity over quality. And here it seems like they did a little bit of both. And again, the angst.
Right.
I'm not sure how to deal with that. But the Giants, it's weird to be so happy for so long with them. That's all.
Yeah, I'm actually scrolling through right now. I'm looking for this one Facebook comment that I got on the McCovey Chronicles Facebook page. Like and share with your friends right now. I'm looking for this one comment where like this guy's like, yeah, Samardzija led the league in runs, Cueto's arm's falling off, Brandon Crawford's never going to be as good again, LOL, like this is the worst offseason ever. And it's totally serious and it's fascinating. I want to study this person.
It wasn't me. I didn't write that. So. yeah, I mean, so you're sitting there going into the season, and I mean, you're going to be going to a lot of games, I imagine, right? You're going to be sitting in the owner's box. You're going to be sitting in the owner's box, popping champagne with Larry Bear, going like, you brilliant bastard. Look what you've done.
Or do you call him Lair Lair?
It's not Uncle Lair.
Uncle Lair.
Uncle Lair. Uncle Lair. Uncle Lair. Around the house, we'll be like, yeah, you know, what will Uncle Lair say about that? And I'll tell him, you know, whenever we have dinner parties here.
Nicely done, LB. That's how you say it at the country club.
But yeah, no, I will be going to probably like 5 games like usual, and they will lose in every single one.
That was where I met you. I met you at a game on that fateful day where the Giants traded for Guillermo Moscoso. Big day in Giants history.
Did they win that game? I can't. That was the.
That was the social media.
Not over yet. He's still pitching the fifth inning.
That's right. That was no, Grant. That was the social media night game with the rain globe that Brandon Belt lost for them.
Right. I remember rain globe night. I just can't remember what it was like, and it was devastating. That's right. It was a devastating loss.
Yeah.
Oh, memories.
Good stuff. Doug, have you and Grant ever met in person in real life, IRL?
Yeah, when Maccabi Chronicles did the meetups at Zeke's, RIP Zeke's, I went to a bunch of those and met Grant. I'm taller than him.
I would pour out a 40 for Zeke's, but I'm still waiting for them to bring my 40 to me. it's a service joke.
That's right. Now we know why they are RIP. Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry. Okay, go on, Doug, sorry.
That's when I met Grant at I don't know, 4 or 5 of those. But the last one I went to was 2012, I want to say. So that's how long it's been.
Long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. You've done quite a bit of growing up, Doug.
I know.
Thanks.
I follow you on the internet, you know. You've come into your own on the internet since then.
He really has found his voice. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
I don't even know what that means.
He's matured. I don't know.
I need to do some of those meetups. I always relied on Craig or Goofus to the people reading to kind of put those together. He would email me dates and be like, hey, how about the, you know, I would like put the burden on him. And that way I didn't have to do anything, which is something I'm really good at. But like, I want to have bigger meetups, and I know it can get the Giants involved and stuff like that. So I will put it on my list of things to ignore, and then I will feel bad about it every time it comes up. That's my promise.
We can't ask anything more
to you.
But maybe someone who's listening will take up the charge or take up the mantle. I don't know, the torch, whatever, to organize, to do it for you.
Yeah. I mean, there's
maybe LB is listening, and he'll delegate that to someone. And
I mean, if you want to tell people that you have sent emails that have gone unanswered to me, I mean, that is on the table. You can send emails that I won't answer, and that's what I have to offer you.
That you can't turn that down, folks. I mean, it's right there for the taking. You should go for it. To have your own email ignored by Grant Brisby. So
filled with self-loathing. Yeah.
So you've expanded the. How does it feel? You've come such a long way with, you know, SB Nation and Vox and everything to really just essentially be the cream that rises to the top and be the main target of any assault. I'm sorry, the most popular person. of it. Do you think about that, or do they just, because you have so much work to do that and so many other life responsibilities, that you never sit back while you're getting drunk or drinking your bourbon to think about your legacy that you're creating post by post?
I hate most of what I do, like actively hate it. Like, I think I am pretty bad at writing about the Giants because it feels like I'm totally missing a lot. And and them winning really screws up my voice because it's hard to be so bitter and cynical.
It really
so
is.
I don't like what I write there. Man, you come off like if you're too bitter or cynical, you end up coming off like Brian. I mean, it's like, whoa, can you even imagine? No, but it's I hate everything I write about the Giants, and I hate everything I write nationally because I feel like it's impossible to write about baseball nationally just because there's so much. Like, there's just so, like, you know, we're sitting here talking about Rando Moreno because we follow the Giants obsessively, but there's like just, you know, I can't name every person in every bullpen. I can't name the players on the bench who have a chance to succeed. So I know I'm screwing up nationally, that when I write about like the Indians, that there's going to be an Indians guy reading this going, this guy has no idea what's going on with the Indians, does he? And he's right. You know, I don't know anything about the Indians. So I hate that. I hate that the writing I do outside because I'm too tired to write that. I don't think about my legacy unless I'm actively hating it, to answer your question. I think it's a good legacy.
I'm going to let you off the hook with the Indians.
I'm proud of it.
That's good. I'll let you off the hook about the Indians. I'm pretty sure the Indians aren't even sure what they're doing. Have you paid attention? The Indians, the Indians have signed, what, they got Mike Napoli? I think they did that.
I always joke because the Indians kind of fascinate me just in general. They're like an underrated streak. Like, everyone's all, oh, the Cubs, and they've got the history of postseason pain, and the Indians kind of fly under that radar. And I think they've built a really interesting team. But every time I want to write about them nationally, it's been a joke for the whole time I've been a full-time writer, is that if I write about the Indians, it's to get it off my chest because no one will read it. And it's true every single time. Like, no one reads my Indians posts at all. I mean, like, I don't know if I said something and like the Indians fans just know to ignore me rightfully. But it's just no one reads those posts. So I do it. I just wrote about them, and it was to get it off my chest. Like, I haven't written about them in a while, and I have a lot to say about the Indians, so I'm just going to spit it out. And then it did no traffic, and that's fine. That's what Indians posts do. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but that's the Indians to a national baseball writer, at least to me.
You were saying that your legacy is secure, and you were giving us an example of that. So.
Yeah, no, my legacy. Sometimes I do sit back with the bourbon and think, God, look at everything I've done and how good I am.
Good, good. I think more people should do that. I think more people should do that. I'm friendly with the, you know, writers on TV shows, and one of them is like someone whose work I looked up to and like was really big deal to me. And I've asked his wife before. I'm like, do you ever catch him in the study, like just sitting back, like with a glass of scotch or something, and just being like, God damn, that we were brilliant. We did such good work. Like just like totally admiring himself, but like staring off into the middle distance, like talking to no one. I feel like some people should do that. I feel like Grant, you could sit back and be like, that rating cats post was brilliant. It was just brilliant. That was one of the greatest things I've ever done. You know, Bill Hanstock should probably be sitting back with the Yankees gif post. He could probably sit back and well, he doesn't drink, so, you know, it'd be a nice tall glass of water and just be like, that was some good stuff.
And the Macklemore tweet too.
The Macklemore tweet, yeah. Yeah, but your cat's ranking is one of your greatest SB Nation posts. Nothing to do with the Indians.
Yeah, it's funny because right now there's a cat actively meowing trying to get out. And you're going to hear him if you listen to this. Now he doesn't want out. Now he wants to sit in my bed and stare at me.
He knows we're talking about it.
Cats really are.
Yeah, he knows we're talking about it.
They really are assholes. They really are assholes. No, I usually sit back with a glass of bourbon and I'll do the smack in my lips and go, I'm a fraud and this is all going to come crashing down. But at least I have this scotch right now. And then the scotch goes away quickly. And those are the happiest moments of my life. You're right. When I'm alone drinking, thinking thoughts.
I only think about my bad posts. And of course, that's most of them. So I think about them a lot. I think about the rejected ones that I've had. Like the one that you didn't understand conceptually. I'm like, how could I have made that better?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think about that.
I still feel bad about that one. I do feel bad because I shovel crap on the side a lot. So why was I so protective that day? Just because, like, I think I had a problem with the reverse chronology of it, and I just didn't have time. I'm not complaining.
You were right to shoot. If you shoot stuff down, that's fine. I feel like I didn't bring that across the finish line conceptually. So, like, the Hall of Fame one that I said, I'll write about this, and then I realized, like, writing about the Hall of Fame is, like, the worst thing a person can do, so I'm not going to do that. So.
No, I'm going to publish it right now.
Please don't. The pitch was, to keep no one in the dark, it was basically the Sony Pictures had that whole email hacking scandal, and I was trying to point out that that people from Sony had been in touch with the Giants, and after, you know, at some point for various reasons over the years, and so these were some of those emails. That was all the hack was, but I didn't do a good enough job of really setting that up, and they weren't funny. I mean, they probably weren't that good.
I maintain that you had a Photoshop thing, because this was last offseason,
right,
when the Giants didn't have a left fielder or third baseman, and right, you had a Photoshop thing from Larry Bear saying, we have decided to eliminate left field and third base, and that was hilarious, because you had a little diagram there.
So that was
yeah, that's good. I'll...
That was it.
I'm
not airing it to get it posted. No, just I think I deleted it anyway. But it was just, you know, those are the things
It starts with, an unprecedented cyber attack has befallen an American movie studio. It revealed that a lot of people working in Hollywood are shallow, petty, and completely incompetent. And then it comes as no surprise that a lot of executives and producers look to a successful organization, our beloved San Francisco Giants, for guidance. And then that's a good lead. You know, it gets you into it, and it makes it seem, you know, like you're going to drop some bombshells.
And then I don't.
That's the diagram. There's some good stuff.
But that's what I drink about. Anyway, I'm not trying to keep you on the hook. Doug, do you have any questions for Grant? Grant, do you have any questions for us? This is a let's move on from that.
Well, there's just the one question really quick for Grant. Brian, you mentioned it in your email to me about what we might talk to Grant about. Grant, if you ascended to heaven and could only take one of us with you, who would it be?
Oh, that's a good question. Brian, are you in a relationship right now?
I am.
See, then you'd both complain about that other person not being there, then you had to spend eternity with me, right?
She'd like, probably you, be fine like, with
look
it.
At me and but I mean, like, you would look at me for eternity and be like, wow, you sure aren't my significant other. And that would be sad. So that can't be a tiebreaker. I'd go with Doug. And you know why? Because I think I've interacted with Brian a little bit more. And I think Doug would have a little bit more mystery for me. And if we're talking about eternity,
I respect the hell out of that answer. I respect the hell out of that answer. It's like, I've met him. I got the gist of it. So,
no, you know, I've G-chatted with Brian. I've met him in person. What more do you want me to do with him, you know?
That's fair point. Grant, do you have any questions for us?
Do you guys talk behind the scenes about me specifically? Like, if I'm being a dick or if I'm, like, asking or doing things wrong or not giving you guys the right opportunity, or do you guys talk about your resentment of me behind my back?
No, it's implied.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, we speak in code when we're like, Grant probably hates us and this and this podcast. What we're basically saying is, like, we hate Grant. And we resent that he's not on this podcast every week. That's what we're saying.
But we're not flat out saying it. We're not, so the answer to your question is
that's
no.
Right. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good.
But I mean, Now, the right question to ask then would have been like, what is everyone else saying about you behind your back? Because we know that.
Fair enough.
If you wanted to know about the rest of the staff, well, no, just kidding. I'm kidding.
No, but I do want you guys to know that I'm big fans of yours. And this is a good opportunity for me to tell both of you that I'm constantly pleased and surprised by how good your stuff is. I shouldn't say surprised by how good your stuff is, because that sounds dickish, like my expectations are really low, which they're not. They're like medium. No, but seriously, I love what you guys add to the site, and I think it pushes me, you know, just when you guys do something funny, it makes me say, it pisses me off is what it does. Like when you guys do something that does well, it annoys me that I didn't do it first, or that maybe I did do it first and you did it better. So basically you guys piss me off, and that's a good thing.
Happy to help. Yeah. I am very appreciative of the way that you're able to keep your hatred of the Dodgers at a low simmer and write that into your stuff, because I can't, I'm very one or the other. It's off and I appreciate them, or it's on and I'm just whatever. But you're able to find that little tweak of the nipple hair or something that just is a little slight in there, and then you can ramp it up. It's very nice. I appreciate the degrees, the levels you work at. I am the Incredible Hulk, or I'm dead. That's all I've got.
I appreciate the way that whenever Lars or Sean runs that stupid Grant loves the Dodgers joke into the ground on Twitter, you somehow don't reach through your computer and murder them.
Yes.
That's really impressive.
Well, that seems like
I just think.
Oh, go ahead.
I mean, they're basically Waldorf and Statler. I mean, that's how I picture them. And it's basically like, it's hard to get mad at Muppets. Just picture them as like literally being Muppets. Like I've never met either of them, so it's easy for me to think of them as like literal Muppets. Literal Muppets. They're for amusement. And so when they make their jokes, it's like, oh, there go those Muppets again.
I hope they
know how I feel.
Well, we could break out into a Muppet-esque song to explain it if it wasn't clear. How about we just transition into Twitter questions? That seems like a perfect one, because the first question can be from Lars. So, Grant, you want to stick around and answer some Twitter questions?
Yes, I'd love to stick around and answer some Twitter questions.
We like to throw these out. They're usually about, they can be about anything, but people tend to just stick to the Giants, which probably makes sense. Anyway, so Lars asks, at Lars the Wonder asks, which boner commercial do you prefer, Double Tubs or Football Jersey Woman? And I've got to be honest, because most of the time I don't see these commercials, I don't have context for either of them, which is great.
Boner Football Jersey Lady actually follows me on Twitter. And because I wrote about Boner Football Jersey Lady for SB Nation. I every year I do the worst commercials of the MLB postseason. And I wrote about this one, and someone must have sent it to her and said, man, look at this guy talking smack about your boner commercial. And so she had a good sense of humor about it. And I can't find the tweet right now, but it's something about, I never thought about the boner branch extending to the heavens, LOL, because that's what I wrote, that there was a boner branch in the commercial. So she's an all-time favorite. She took it with grace and didn't get offended that I was making fun of her boner commercial. I mean, if you're in a boner commercial and you don't know that that's at least a little funny, you know, that you're not going to go too far in life, but you got to have a little sense of boner humor. Boner.
Doug?
Probably I like the Double Tubs, because I don't understand the Double Tubs. So it sort of opens up a whole new world of questions for me. Because what's going on? How is that related to something you're presumably doing together? Where does that come from? How is that a thing that's in a lot of these commercials? It's really, there are a lot of questions you can ask. It's very intellectually stimulating.
Actually, Double Tubs also seems to step on the premise of the commercial, which is, if you take this pill, you can be together. So then why would you be in warm tubs separately where you can do your own thing? That doesn't make sense.
See, it's fascinating.
Your boner will... No, your boner will be too big for you both to be in the same tub.
Oh, so it's, this is it, like, she will be... Oh, I get it. She'll literally drown in a bathtub of you. I got it.
It's going to be like poison ivy, like shooting an ivy strand out, and it's going to crawl across the floor. Never mind. It's
also, I like the idea that a woman in a football jersey is walking around during MLB playoff commercial space. That's always great when you can do that. Instead of her being in a baseball jersey, that doesn't make sense.
It's implied. It's like you're so bored because you're watching baseball, and then some woman in a football jersey comes on. And it's like, hey guys, wouldn't you like to really have fun? And it's like, oh yeah, you know, I would. It's like implied, like what you're doing right now by A, not taking the pill, and B, watching baseball is really boring, and I'm here to help. So it makes perfect sense to me.
Okay, this is a stimulating, intense, hard discussion of these ads. Okay, so get more serious. At Amma the Anka? I'm not going to even bother with that. Sorry. Of the current MLB franchises, which is the likeliest to relocate? So a little context, actually. Hold on, a little context. MLB is definitely interested in expanding to, like, Mexico or another international market. And obviously there's other places in America, in the U.S. to do it, but it's possible. Anyway.
I could see the Rays. I mean, the popular one, the answer would be the A's, you know, get them out of Oakland into Portland or Las Vegas. But I think that's weird because the East Bay is really rich, like, and it's just getting richer and richer. And there's a lot of people out here, and there's going to be a lot of money coming into the East Bay. And I think the A's will eventually get a beautiful new ballpark that they will have paid mostly themselves, and it will make perfect sense. Like, it'll fit with the timeline of what's happening to the East Bay. Whereas the Rays, you know, a little bit touchier in Florida because they'll want to use the public money, and I don't think that's going to be easy after the Marlins duped, you know, Miami-Dade County and the state for their ballpark. So I could see the Rays, because their situation is untenable. Like, at least the A's, you know, their stadium is maybe a little bit overflowing with sewage, slightly, possibly with a little bit of sewage overflow. But the Rays are just in a place where no one can get to. I mean, at least you can get to the A's park. But, you know, no one wants to go to the Rays park, because it's just like in the middle of nowhere. You have to fight the traffic to get there. So I could see them moving if they can't hammer something out. But I think the probably likeliest answer is no one's going to move. That would be like the Occam's razor. You know, there probably isn't going to be a team that's going to move in the next 30 years because there hasn't been one for 30 years or since the Expos.
I think that 4 years after they open their new stadium in Cobb County, the Braves are going to move again.
Oh, that would be delightful. I mean, because it's possible, because, I mean, that is such a boondoggle. I mean, just people, that whole thing where people might not be able to cross the freeway to get from the parking lot right to the stadium because, like, this one bridge isn't getting built. And it's like, you know, there's just some city council person like, well, figure it out. You know, it's not our problem. Isn't going to get built.
It gives them a chance to name one of them White Flight Field and then the other one White Panic Park. So you could, if they did that, it would work out.
Oh, Jesus. That is going to be, I'm going to look forward to that. That's going to be such a mess. It's such a beautiful, avoidable mess.
Yeah. I mean, most of the teams are well situated in their stadiums, and I'm probably wrong on this, but a lot of the newer stadiums seem built to last. Like, they're designed to be a right part of the city and basically be Fenways and of the world and go from there. So yeah, I can't imagine, like, even the Twins. I thought the Twins were one of the teams that were possibly either going to be contracted or moved when all that was happening over a decade ago, and they're not going anywhere. So the A's, It's so weird. Everyone wants them in Oakland, but except for, I guess, there's not enough of a tax base right there in Oakland. But you're right about the East Bay. I don't know.
That's
my non-answer.
No, I see the A's staying. I mean, I think it's, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of the search. You know, I go on newballpark.org every once in a while and see what they have to say. And it's a fascinating search. And I know it's not as simple as like, well, build a waterfront, you know, ballpark, because there's, you know, not that land necessarily right there. There's public transit and all that stuff to think about. But I do think there's got to be an option with so much money in the Bay Area. And the Giants, they're not going to let San Jose go because that means too much money to them. And I think baseball's just going to sit and fart around and let that issue die on its own. So I think the option would be to move or to stay in Oakland. And I can't imagine another market being more attractive than the Bay Area, even if you have to share it, even if you don't get the number one spot that would have the most Silicon Valley money flowing in. Even with, if you don't get those things, the East Bay is still going to be better than Portland or Vegas or something crazy like that.
Okay. Next question is from @Eames, EAM, and then 4 S's. If Cueto, Span get hurt and Samardzija sucks, but the Giants get Splash 69, was the season a success?
No, that's a fantastically stupid question. that actively pisses me off. What kind of no? for that night, it would be a delightful night. Splash 69 would make a lot of sins go away for that night. But if Span, Samardzija, and Cueto aren't good next year, that would bother me a lot because I'm already expecting them not to be good in 3 years. I mean, that's like built in. Like in 3 years, we're going to be talking about them as if they're actively hurting the team. And I'm okay with that. That's how it works. But if they're not good next year, That's going to sting. But we're all looking forward to Splash 69.
I don't even see Cueto on the team in 3 years. I think he opts out with
very few options. Well, if he thinks he will.
I don't know. I think if he's good either of these 2 years, he's going to opt out. Just because the market is going to keep getting crazier. So if he's great this year, but he stinks the next year, he's going to try to go on, you know, 2016's track record and 2014. And most of 2015, and then he's going to try to do that, leverage it. That's what I think, but who knows? I don't know anything. So, but what if 69? What if Splash 69 is like against the Dodgers in a clinching game? See, this question doesn't say that the Giants aren't competitive. It just says, what if they get hurt and this happens? There are ways where 69 can really hurt.
Like my smart ass answer to that question was, well, yeah, because it's an even year, so they're going to win the World Series.
If you told someone in 2007, hey, the Giants are going to win the World Series in 2010, you would immediately think, oh, wow, Zito must have been awesome. So if you're telling me that Cueto, Samardzija, and Span get hurt, you know, oh, the Giants must not win the World Series. Well, no, you've got, I mean, they can get Kurt Ainsworth back. You know, Troy Brohan can come back. Pat Mish just threw a perfect game in Taiwan last year. They can get him in a trade from the Brewers or something. So that there's options. So if they get hurt and the Giants get Splash 69 and they win the World Series, well, that's the best scenario of all, isn't it?
That's right. I think Jarrett Parker hitting a slider off of Clayton Kershaw as a walk off. For Splash 69, I mean, that could happen. Who knows? There's so many things improbable with that. The first one being Jarrett Parker hitting a slider. But there you go.
That would be awesome, though, because it would mean Kershaw would be in the ninth for a reason, because he's been awesome all the whole game. It would mean that Parker was up against him because the bench was so mismanaged that there'd be no other option. That would be a fantastic scenario. I like that.
Okay, our last question. Doug has our last question.
All right, our last question is from Roger Munter at Raj61, McKevy Chronicles' own Roger, who does minor lines for us and is incredible, and we don't deserve him.
Amazing job, yeah.
And the question is, big question for 2016, how close to a baseline performance was 2015 for the four infielders? Will regression bite or happy times a fest?
Ah, that is a fantastic question, considering that it's something that I worry about all the time, especially because it's very easy to like just assume this is Matt Duffy. Whereas last year at this time, if you thought he would be half as valuable as he was, you would have been giddy. And so now it's like we're just all arrogant and expecting him to be as good as he's been. But what if he's not? And the same thing with Panic. I mean, you know, he's coming off the back injury. And what if he's not that good? Because, you know, we weren't necessarily expecting him to have the kind of extra base power that he had. And same with Crawford. What if he's not a 20 home run guy? So it's very kind of herky jerky all around, except I'm just going to assume that Brandon Belt is going to make up for whatever regression by hitting 30 home runs himself and having a 700 plate appearance season. That's my answer. I think that they'll regress a little bit, but Brandon Belt will come and save us.
You stole my answer. That's
completely realistic.
Yeah. You stole my answer that whatever losses they have will be covered by full-time Brandon Belt over there.
And he's going to wear that great Gazoo helmet, and that'll keep him from getting concussed.
That's right. And as I pitched last week, he's going to try to be like the Fonz a little bit more, be a little cooler, maybe change his attitude up a little bit more so that pitchers think about him differently. They're like, that's the Fonz. I got to pitch the Fonz carefully.
It's a struggle every time. Like the Giants face Alex Torres. Like I can't make fun of, like, it's like ethically, like I can't make fun of a guy trying to protect himself, even though that those helmets look so ridiculous.
One thing I really appreciate about Matt Duffy. Well, I should go off of that first. Yeah. I mean, if more guys wear those helmets or those hats, I mean, if they start pouring more money into it, they will get better at, they will start to look better as the technology improves. So it's in everyone's benefit to kind of just be silly. I mean, they're not any sillier than some of the old uniforms of baseball days, like those old White Sox uniforms or like, you know, any of the A's uniforms. The hats are whatever. But Matt Duffy, I really have appreciated his ability to adjust and really just play every day. And so if there is like a negative regression of any kind, I kind of feel like he out of all the other guys, he seems like he's the one to go against, with, not go against, but to say what you were talking about, like maybe this is the Matt Duffy. And I feel stronger saying that about him than I do about the other guys. Although Brandon Crawford's been what he is, except for the power. So.
Yeah, I mean, even when Crawford in the 3 years before that, he was great. You know, he's a perfectly fine starting shortstop. Right. And I think the thing with Duffy that makes it easier to accept him as a permanent part of the infield is that he didn't have that huge cratering slump where he hit, you know, 190 in September or August, and it was his final numbers were buoyed by a crazy hot April or May or something like that. He was just so steady the whole year that it was easy to envision, well, this is just the kind of player he is, you know, nice smooth swings. He's not trying to yank every ball out of the park, but he certainly can hit a home run if he gets the pitch that he likes. So it was easy to see what you wanted to see with him because he never allowed you to see the bad side last year. He didn't slump, you know, that aggressively.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Okay, let's go to our game of the week. It's Oscar season. The Oscar nominations were announced yesterday morning, and so this game has got a couple of parts to it, or a few parts to it. Oscar names, that's the name of the game. One of us is going to name a Giants player. The other two will come up with the name of the film and what the player would be nominated for. So I'm taking it, you could name another Madison Bumgarner thing, but so example, Madison Bumgarner, The Battle of Kansas City, Best Actor. So that's the setup. I'll give you a second to think about it if you like. And Doug, you can go first.
All right. I think we should start out with Joe Panic.
Joe Panic.
Okay. So you're throwing it out to me.
And well, I'm to both of name. Us. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Right. Okay. So Joe Panic, the name. See, because when you said the game, I wasn't listening because
That's
that's what I
okay.
do.
That's okay.
And so I was thinking I was going to come up with the player and what they were nominated for by myself. And so I was thinking like, oh, it's perfect. I have Juan Perez as the key grip, and he was going to get nominated for that, right? Because key grip is
Sure,
a
sure.
that's a movie. That's a movie position. And
Yeah.
he almost, dropped that ball and then picked it back up. So I was so stunned by my own brilliant answer that I couldn't respond to the question that I was supposed to. Joe Panic would be he would be Mr. Delightful, I think, would be the name of his movie. And he would be the best actor. And I think it would just be him basically smiling and going through life, fixing problems. And it would be a pretty bad movie in that there wouldn't be a lot of conflict and angst, but it would be delightful just to watch him, and he would get nominated because of that. I think it would just be so pleasant that it would be like a blanket and a mug of cocoa just to sit with him for 2.5 hours and watch him fix things.
Okay. So his so for me, Joe Panic, he's nominated for best original score for his film Back to Love. So that's my Joe Panic nomination. All right. Okay. Grant, you want to throw someone out for both of us to answer?
Okay. What would Jeremy Affeldt be nominated for?
Jeremy Affeldt. Okay.
This is a loaded question because there's a lot you could run with.
But not scissors.
Oh.
Zing!
Yeah. Okay, so Jeremy Affeldt is to me he's nominated for best supporting actor in. Because right, because he's a reliever, so he is the best supporting actor in Taken 4, and his character helps Liam Neeson find human trafficking victims through tweets. So that's and it's a really powerful role.
Would
That
he
is
be
a
the
good
comic
one.
relief, like falling out of windows, like a French waiter, like a clumsy French
Well, there's
waiter?
a yeah, there's this because there's a scene where he has to actually go in person to meet with Liam Neeson, and that's yeah, then that whole sequence is just him being like the Pink Panther, just or like clumsy and Clouseau-esque, yeah. So,
I think he gets best original screenplay, definitely not adapted for Lefties. There's an exclamation point at the end. It's about a bunch of hapless left-handers who go through life making their own luck, who, they get into bumbles and scrapes, but eventually they come through it with flying colors.
And the big underdog moment is when they have to face a right-handed hitter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Delightful.
Right, so I'll end with I was trying to pick a non-obvious choice. I'm sticking with the obvious. The Bruce Bochy. Bruce Bochy has been nominated for an Academy Award.
Okay, it's going to be best animated film, and it's going to be Grumbles, and Grumbles is a bulldog who perseveres. He makes it out of the pound. He escapes the pound, which is a metaphor for the Padres. And he discovers that life is beautiful outside of the pound, and we all root for Grumbles, and he's just the best darn bulldog there is.
And so his best friend would be like a yappy, or like bird or something. That would be Tim Flannery. So.
Yeah, but oh, yeah, Flannery would be, yeah, that's a good point. I think you had a nail, the parrot, talking parrot, singing parrot. So you've got best original song too.
That's right.
It's like Flan, you know. Flan Parrot is going to, you're going to be humming that thing. It's going to be like twice the hit that Let It Go would be. It would just be Flan Man singing.
Waving you home. Yeah. King waving you home.
I think Bruce Boce gets nominated for best documentary short for The Fisherman, about a man who goes out in the waters beyond AT&T Park every day and goes fishing and never catches anything.
Wait, that's the best part, that they never catch anything.
Right, but he keeps going out there.
It's like it's this weird monkey's paw thing where he gets a lot of success in baseball but none fishing.
Yeah.
So he would narrate that?
Well, he'd have directed it. Would he narrate? And he would also narrate.
Okay. So he's not the subject of it. Okay. All right.
No, it's just somebody he knows. He like sees him every day. He's like, "Man, what are you doing out there?" And the guy's like, "I'm fishing. Today I'm going to catch one."
I would love to see Bruce Boce make a short film, a documentary or something. Well, he wrote a book, so I mean, his ideas for documentaries would fascinate me, I'm sure. And this talk has been so fascinating. Grant Brisby. Grant Brisby of Sports on Earth, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It was a pleasure to be here. I hope that I hope you can edit out the really, really dumb answers that I gave for some of the ones. And you know which ones I gave. So if you don't, you know, I'll talk to you behind the scenes.
Well, I'm going to splice together some answers so it sounds like you're saying something else. I'm pretty sure I have enough to redo that.
Could you do that? Like, could you? That would be so fun. Like, if like after every like question, like all of a sudden you're like, "So, okay, what would Joe Panic be nominated for?" And I'd be like, "Monty Irvin was one of the most important things about Giants baseball history."
Hello.
Then you could re-record. Okay, Grant, I can see this is very important to you. I think he could be a lot angrier.
Wouldn't it be
Joe Panic in the movie?
It'll be right after the introduction, and you'll be, "Hello, Brian. Do you have a girlfriend? No, no. Do you want to bone?" I think that will be. all right. Well, thanks.
Like, carte blanche.
Okay.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on my own damn podcast.
Yeah, that's right. It is. That's right. It is your own damn podcast.
I'm teasing.
That's right. We're using your name. We're creating content in your skin. All right.
No, it was funny because when you said like I'm doing a podcast, I was kind of like, "Well, I want to be a guest on the podcast." But, you know, I can't say that. So I'm glad. I'm glad you guys decided to have me on. It was a blast. Fella.
I want you every week. So I just figured it would be impolite. So
I will be on as many times as you guys want me on.
All right. You heard him, Doug.
Yeah. Great. I'm writing that down.
It's fun.
I'm tattooing it on my forehead.
Right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Grant. Grant Brisby, by the way, folks, Grant Brisby is at McCoveyCron, if you didn't know, on Twitter. I'm at Every Sixth Day. Doug, what are you again? I always forget.
I am at Moonwalk McFly.
And we are on Blog Talk Radio, McCovey Chronicles, McCovey Croncast, if you want to search. We're also on iTunes, download, review. We're 5 stars of the best podcast ever right now. And please, next week, we're going to have another great guest. Wendy Thurm is joining us, and we'll be back and hope you listen to us then. Thanks again.